Welcome to Nap Inspiring with John Agroni and Maria Garcia, where we talk about movies, everything, and everything. Really, we just rant about stuff that we think is cool and that you might think is cool. Enjoy! Hey guys, welcome to Nap Inspiring. I'm your host, John Agroni, and my co-host is here today, Maria Garcia, hailing from... Where are you from again?
From Puerto Rico.
Yeah, I knew that. I just think it's cool.
Yeah.
So we're coming at you with a lot of cool things today. A lot of fun things happened this week. Mainly, and I think is what's going to take most of our attention, is we have a new trailer for Pixar's latest film. I believe this is their 15th film, if I'm not mistaken. And it's called Inside Out. And if you guys are big Pixar fans, you've heard about Inside Out for a while. We got a teaser not too long ago, about a month or two ago. And now we finally have an official trailer. And, you know, this is one of those trailers that we could really talk about for a while, Maria. I feel like you and I could rant about Inside Out just on this trailer alone for hours. But we'll keep it short. Later in the show, we're going to talk about Exodus, which Maria saw, and Imitation Game, which I saw. And we'll also let you know all the latest movie releases coming out next week and what we think maybe you should go check out if you want to go to the movies. So stay tuned. First, Inside Out. So Maria, I'm guessing you saw the Inside Out teaser. Refresh my memory.
Oh yeah, we saw it, and we've talked about Inside Out a few times before, and I think, as far as I recall, we're both very excited about this movie.
Of course. I mean, you're like obsessed with Disney animation. I'm obsessed with Pixar. This is one of the few things you and I agree on when it comes to anything, really, in real life. So
yeah.
I'm excited to talk about it, because I've been wanting to. I remember I saw the trailer at work, and I was just, because it came out like here in California, it was like really early in the morning, so I was like geeking out. Everybody's like, why are you geeking out? Pixar is for babies. No, nobody said that, but like that's kind of what I felt, you know, like I felt so alone. So I'm really excited to kind of rant about it. But so what did you think of the trailer? Just, you know, first impression.
First impression, I thought it was great. I think they portrayed the concept of, you know, how the mind works in these characters very well. And I think it's enough to get you hooked. And I don't know about you, but I'm hooked. I'm really excited about it.
So hooked. It's not even... I finished the trailer and I was just like, I was laughing, I was crying. So many things were happening. It was like it's like when I watched The Wedding Bride. So with the Inside Out trailer, obviously, like, it was a bit of a surprise. I knew this the day before. I read a story about how they were going to go into the parents' heads, which I hadn't realized up until right before the trailer came out. Did that surprise you, or did you also hear about that?
Yeah, it totally surprised me, because, as far as we knew, and the characters that were shown, it's all in the girl's head. And I'm thinking we're just going to see how her mind works.
Yeah.
So it did catch me by surprise how it might be, I don't know, the entire family or every other human character in the story, you might see how their mind works. It was not something I was expecting.
I hope it happens to a lot of characters, you know? Like, I want to see Riley, like, at school and, like, see all the different kids and their emotions. And because for me, that's what made the trailer so funny, was just, like, how everybody, like, what made them think. I mean, the writing was really spot on there. I was laughing like crazy, especially with the mom.
It was so good.
But yeah, so obviously the trailer kind of gave us more of a glimpse. You may have noticed when they showed us the emotions in Riley's head, and this is something I want to hear you speculate on.
Okay.
Well, first things first, you'll notice that joy and sadness are missing. They're not in her head. And we actually kind of saw this coming, because the plot synopsis, not the one that they have on the Pixar website, but a few months back, they pointed out that the bulk of the story is going to be about how, because Riley's going through puberty, you know, she's 11 years old, because she's going through puberty, joy and sadness have gone missing, kind of like what really happens in a teenager, right? So then disgust,
right,
fear, anger, those emotions start to take control, even though joy, you know, was really like, you know, as a kid, like that's, when you're a kid, you're usually like really happy or you're really sad. But in puberty, that those emotions kind of, you know, go into the surface a little bit. And when we saw that dinner scene, that's obviously taking place at a critical point in the movie, when joy and sadness are missing for probably the first time and the parents are like noticing it. So it was really interesting to get a sneak peek into how the story is going to work. You know, it was her first day of school, so we kind of got some insight into, okay, so maybe for her, like, the critical point of her life is, like, the first day of school, and, like, she's at that, you know, really pivotal age, and they just moved, which we found out they're in San Francisco, and her dad just got a job at a startup company, because it's San Francisco, and, yeah, so that's kind of what we're getting. But, yeah, did you notice anything interesting, though, about the emotions that we saw in the parents' heads, too? Because I know, like, there were a few interesting things I noticed.
Well, I don't know how to explain it. It was, like, a little bit fast-paced for me to notice. You noticed a lot of things that I didn't even notice. I don't know how many times you've seen it, but I think it's really 40. Cool. Like you said, that joy and anger are not in her head at the moment. I love the fact that even though it's, like, the same characters for every human, they're different, and they're kind of resembling who the person is.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So the mom's character, I think they were all female, right?
They were all female. And
yeah.
I think they had different voices than
they
Riley's.
Do.
Okay, yeah. I was suspicious of that. I just couldn't tell.
I'm pretty sure they have different voices, and in general, well, yeah, they're the same emotions for each character, but I love that they're, like, custom for all of them.
Right.
And, like, in the mom's head, I think they all had glasses as well, and that was really cool. And in the guy's head is more analytical and more, you know, like a whole operation, as opposed to, you know, the women's side that was a little bit more
and of course,
emotional
they all,
and all that. I thought it was really great.
The dad's emotions all have mustaches, too, of course.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that one. That's true.
And it is cool, like, how for both of the parents, like, a different emotion leads each parent. So in the mom, sadness led her, which was kind of depressing.
Oh, I didn't notice that someone different is in charge. That's true.
Yeah. And the same with the dad. I think anger was in charge.
Yes.
It's kind of funny. But, like, I don't think sadness is really the emotion they were going for, it because it felt like that was the emotion that was very, like, conscientious. You know, it's like the part of a mom where you're kind of the emotional center and you're seeing that your kid is, like, you know, she was able to look at the sadness in her kid more than it was a, you know, reflection of the mom being sad, I think is what they were trying to go for. I don't know if it's really going to go that deep. But yeah, you're right. It was really interesting seeing the differences. Like, I think of the mom's head as being like the cast of The View, and the dad's head being like a missile defense site.
Right.
And it was so cool seeing that whole scene play out. One thing too, like, I love, like, the texture of the emotions. Like, it's so different from, like, you know, like, the animation's different. They have, like, what was that? Was it, like, fur or, like, I can't even tell. It's, like, a different style.
They have, like, a velvet fur thing going on. I'm not sure what it is, but it's definitely visible, and it's really good.
Yeah, I like the memory thing that's coming, like, when the mother brings the orb down and they can see, like, the memories. And I think that stuff is so cool. It was cool to finally see that in action. And I'm guessing that, like, the super emotional moment is going to be, like, a memory or something. And Riley's going to remember something. And then there's going to be parent-daughter drama. And, you know, it's a Pixar movie. That's we're used to this by now.
You're going
to
cry, John.
I'm not going
to say that.
Well, I cried during the trailer.
I'm going to cry. I have no problem saying that. I know that already.
Yeah, but that's okay. It'll be in a theater in public. So, you know, that's fine. So yeah, that's the Inside Out trailer, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, did you hear about any of, like, just some of the backlash the trailer got?
I heard something about them portraying the parents as very negligent, like, people didn't like that.
I heard, I think people said that the dad was negligent, but
right.
I think what I heard was people were just, like, complaining about the parents being stereotypes. You know, the mom is, like, the emotional one. The dad is, like, always distracted by sports. And people were like, oh, this is terrible. Terrible writing and all this stuff. What did you think about that?
I didn't feel that way about any of the characters. I think it's a very short clip of what these characters are going to be like. I'm pretty certain it's going to develop them as well. I mean, if we're going in the mind of all these people, you will get to know them a little bit better. I think it was a fair assessment. Like, the mom is a little bit more worried and more aware of her kid, and the dad maybe is distracted with work and just needs, like, his downtime. He's thinking about other stuff. It didn't bother me at all. I think there's...
So you don't think it's a bad thing?
No, I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, if the characters continue to be this way throughout the film, then maybe you would say it's not they're very one-dimensional, but I doubt Pixar will ever leave these main characters as one-dimensional. It's not the way they do it.
Yeah, I'm glad you agree, because it really irked me to read that people were, like, making this complaint. It's like they've never seen a Pixar movie, because the first thing I thought of was the dinner scene in The Incredibles. It's just like that. If you had just seen that dinner scene, you know, where the dad is kind of, you know, he's in a daze, the mom is, like, keeping it all together, the kids are being bratty. I mean, yeah, Pixar writes characters that way in little scenes like that, because that's how you relate to characters. If they messed with that, it wouldn't be believable, and you wouldn't you wouldn't appreciate the characters, and, like, because that's kind of like real life. I know it was for me growing up, and I'm sure it was for a lot of other people watching the trailer. Even if it wasn't, you've seen that play out in sitcoms, and yeah, I think we don't have to worry about Pixar's writing team. I think they know what they're doing.
I agree.
I like the characters so far. I see Riley, and I'm just like, I've been waiting for, like, a movie to really attack, you know, that time of a kid's life, because they always, you know, kind of shy away from it for some reason, even though that's, like, such an important, you know, Nemo, like, look at that, like, that was kind of in the same vein, even though he was a little younger, it was that kind of, like, coming of age tale, but usually kids movies don't really try to go for that stuff.
Yeah, they don't, and I think we mentioned that before, it's the first film, maybe in a very long time, that it's set in this particular age, and if there are other characters in Pixar movies about younger kids, they're, like, secondary characters, like an Up.
Right.
And so it is very exciting. I think it's something that you would think, oh, why haven't they done this? But at the same time, I think it's just the right time to do it.
I vaguely remember, too, it was, like, before the Mary-Kate and Ashley era, which was, like, mm-hmm. they kind of, like, brought in the preteen audience. Like, for whatever reason, the entertainment industry just didn't really see a lot of value in the preteen market, I think. But Mary-Kate Ashley, like, totally disproved that, because when they were in there, you know, when they were that age, like, they used to, like, do those direct to, you know, all those movies that they did, and, like, people ate that stuff up. And I think it's awesome that Pixar is going for that age group, and the story seems really deliberate. You should read some of the interviews that Pete Docter's done. He did an Ask Me Anything, and it was either an Ask Me Anything or it was, like, a Twitter question thing. I forget what it was. But I read some comments from that, and they were great. Like, the way he, like, describes, like, why they made the movie makes me really want to see it. And the reason is because he's like, I see in my kids that time of life, you know, where their emotions are so, like, haywire. And he thinks that that makes, like, a really good story. And we're going into the parents' heads, because parents, too, have some crazy emotions. And watching all of that play out in just the simple, seemingly mundane situations, like a dinner scene, is something that I think people will relate to, and people are going to find a lot of humor in. And I just think it's a world that Pixar really, like, I think it's a Pixar-esque kind of world. You know how, like, they always, like, take certain settings or ideas and they make movies out of them? So, like, yeah. Toy Story was about toys coming alive. Bug's Life was about, like, the world of bugs. Finding Nemo, Ocean, Monsters, Inc., Monsters, Incredibles, Superheroes. Cars, you know, the super concept movie. One thing that kind of didn't work for Brave was because Brave didn't really, I mean, I loved Brave, a great movie, but, you know, a lot of people don't hold it to the same level of Pixar magic. And I think part of that might be because Brave wasn't really it wasn't a very Pixar-esque, you know, setting. It was just kind of like, it just happened to be in, you know, Scottish Middle Ages, and it was about magic, kind of not. But yeah, that makes me kind of excited about this movie.
Yeah, I never thought about it before, but you're right. The whole, like, they make their little worlds for each movie, it's a big trait for them.
They don't have to. They didn't do it for Up.
No, they didn't. And yet that was, would you say, the most successful Pixar movie?
No, the most successful Pixar movie was Finding Nemo. If you adjust for inflation, it made the biggest profit. I think it was like something about like $1.2 billion. Toy Story 3 comes close. Up, actually, it's in like the middle of like most successful. Not middle, I'd say like upper tiers. But it didn't do as well as like Incredibles or the Toy Story movies. I think it did about as well as like Monsters, Inc., you know, in that territory. In fact, this might surprise you. Did you like the movie WALL-E?
Yes.
WALL-E actually happens to be, I think it's the least... No, Bug's Life is the least successful in terms of, like, box office. And okay. WALL-E is, like, down there as well. It's, like, at the very bottom.
It's strange. I do remember that UB had, like, great reviews since, like, from the get-go. But,
Same with WALL-E.
I don't know. Yeah, same with WALL-E. But I think WALL-E, maybe the second act is not as strong. I don't know. Maybe the people had problems with the different settings, like that big division. I personally love the first part of WALL-E way more than the second one. I don't know if you feel the same way.
I think WALL-E is perfect, but
yeah. I agree.
I love that. Like, I felt like if they stayed any longer on Earth, it would have gotten boring. I love that they switched it up. I loved it. I loved Axiom, and I loved the idea of, like, the people in the chairs. I wouldn't change WALL-E myself, but, and I think critics really liked it. I think, kind of speaking to your point, audiences were a little put off, like, just to go see it and give it a chance because, well, you know, there's not that much dialogue. And it's kind of a depressing setting. It's a very ambitious animated kids film, if you really think about it. But yeah, you know, Pixar doesn't just stick with the concept thing. I think Inside Out is an example of that. Up, and even like Ratatouille is an example of not necessarily, like, Ratatouille is kind of like a rat who wants to cook. That's not really like a world concept movie. That's more of a character concept movie, which is a lot like how Up is framed. And it's sort of how Brave, I think, was originally supposed to be framed, but it kind of went haywire for some reason because I didn't really feel connected to Merida much as I wanted to.
I think you're right. Merida, to me, was also, like, very bratty all the time, and I think that was a problem. However, I think the whole mom and daughter relationship was a really new thing that they explored really well, the way mothers and daughters interact and how they start to disagree and, you know, just the bond between the two. I think the problem maybe with Brave was that it was trying to do the princess thing at the same time, and so maybe they kind of got it a little, like you said, it was a little messy. It wasn't as great as people expected it to be.
It's weird because it did things that I liked because it did novel things with really, and the characters were great. I loved Fergus. I really liked Merida. I think, yeah, she could be bratty at times, but I kind of was like, I was on her side the whole time. And I even liked how funny the mom was. I think the issue for me was it took so long for the plot to take shape. And, like, even then, I just didn't feel like the movie was going anywhere or trying to do anything. I just felt like it was this weird, drawn-out fight between a mom and her daughter. Mm-hmm. And, like, that just doesn't really... That's good character study, but that's not good animation. Or I shouldn't say good animation, because the animation was amazing. That's not good story for an animated movie when you're trying to show off beautiful worlds and awesome concepts when it's really just kind of walking around, talking, and not really doing anything of utmost importance, even when your heroine is apparently like a master archer. I think that's what was kind of weird for me, but...
Yeah, I agree.
Hey, it was still a great movie, you know? Even by Pixar standards, it's definitely, you know, it's way better than Cars 2. So on that note, we'll talk more about Inside Out as we learn more about it and as we see more scenes and obsess over how much fun we think this movie is going to be. For now, we're going to move on, and we're going to talk about a couple of movies that, you know, just recently came out. I went and saw The Imitation Game last night, which isn't playing quite everywhere, which I realized when I was in the theater because it was packed, because it was like the only theater playing this film. And Maria got to go see Exodus of Gods and Men, the Christian Bale, I think his name is Joel Edgerton, movie about Moses and the Let My People Go Egypt story. And so, Maria, we'll start with you. Tell me, what were your thoughts on Exodus?
Okay. Well, I think Exodus has gotten kind of a bad rep since before it came out because of the whole whitewashing cast and Ridley Scott's response to it, which was pretty much that if you don't have big names in the movie, then no one's going to fund it, etc., etc. So going into the movie, you don't really have high hopes for it. In my opinion, it fell flat. I think it fell flat. Especially because you know the story of Moses and you know all the great moments in the story of Moses. You know, the burning bush, when Moses has to leave, when Moses comes back, you know, the plagues. So you're expecting these moments to be really epic and really great, and just the interactions between the characters wasn't as strong as you'd expected.
Which characters would you say...
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, like, which characters... would you say?
Okay, well, the one I liked the least was Ramesses, which is played by this guy, I forget his name, but he was in Warrior, and he was Daisy's husband in The Great Gatsby.
Yeah,
Yes. And so, you know, Ramesses is supposed to have such a presence. I mean, you're not supposed to relate to him in any way. He's the bad guy and he's really evil. But he's the pharaoh and he's the god on earth, and you're supposed to fear him, and he's supposed to be intimidating. And I just feel like the actor didn't commit very well to the character. He played it kind of like this modern day jock thing with a chip on his shoulder. I didn't like it. And so then Christian Bale doesn't have a lot to play from, and those interactions between these two main characters just fell really flat to me. And there was a lack of emotion in the entire movie. That's what I feel.
That's so sad, because I feel like Ramsay is supposed to be like the most interesting character.
Exactly.
Like, that's, if you don't get Ramsay's right, then you can't get Moses right by default. Like, that's just fact, you know. Same thing, if you don't get Moses right, it's really hard to, you know, pick up the slack. And that's sad to hear. Joel Egerton's a great actor. I guess it goes to what you were saying before. You know, I guess it was hard for him to commit to a role where he has no connection whatsoever to the culture, as far as I know. And, you know, it's like, wow. So you're saying, like, you don't think he really put himself in it?
I don't think it was his fault, because that's what I'm looking at him like, I know he's a good actor. I've seen him do plenty of movies before. I don't know if maybe Ridley Scott just didn't direct his actors right, because it wasn't just him. Like, I mean, for a movie that has so many big names, I mean, you have Christian Bale, you have him, Sigourney Weaver, Ben Kingsley, like, Aaron Paul as well. Everybody just felt, I felt like they could have been played by anybody else, and it would have been better. And you know it's not the quality of the acting, because they're great actors. It just, I don't know, for a movie with so many big names, it wasn't necessary to have any of them. I mean, Sigourney Weaver in this had maybe two lines. And
I heard
she was
abysmal in this. Would you say then it's the director's fault? Do you think it's Ridley Scott? Do you think it's, you know, the writing just wasn't really good? Or do you think it was a combination?
I would say it's Ridley Scott's fault. And that's saying, that's a big assumption to make, because he's an amazing director. But I think it's a movie that has great visuals, because the plagues were amazing. It was so well done. But in terms of the story, I don't know. He had so much to play with. I mean, you have the identity of Moses and how he comes to terms with it, the contrast between the beliefs of the Egyptians and the Hebrews. There's so much. It's an epic story. There's so much you can do with it. And I feel like he just didn't take any chances with it. He could have taken so much in, and he just didn't bother, in my opinion.
That's so sad to hear. What about the parting of the Red Sea? Did they at least get that right?
Well, okay. Yes and no, because it's a little different. It's a little more realistic. But then when the whole sea action starts coming in and the Egyptians rush in, that's a very good scene. It's really well done. It's not what you expect, but I think it was really well done.
I don't want it to be realistic. I want it to be supernatural,
right?
And mythical. Like, that's the whole point.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil it, but it's definitely a little underwhelming at first, but then it gets good.
Well, you've definitely not sold it for me, which is probably a good thing. Well, I don't want to waste... The thing with Exodus was I didn't want to go out and see a movie, spend 2.5 hours for a film that, like, is just going to get panned, and it's just not going to be worth it. So
that's the other thing. It was so long, and I don't mind the movie being long, because it's an epic film, it's Moses, but when you feel it, it's not a good thing.
Wow. Gosh, that's sad to hear. It's getting really bad reviews, you know, all across the board. So I was wondering, you know, maybe Maria will find a sliver of hope in this movie, but clearly that's not the case. But hey, you know, like, you're preventing a lot of other people from seeing it. And
I mean, it's not bad. It's not a movie that you leave hating it, but I would say Prince of Egypt is still a better movie.
I was actually going to ask you, should I just, you know, rent Prince of Egypt tonight and just leave it at that?
Yeah, totally. I would say so. In terms of emotion and feeling the story, I think Prince of Egypt is better. I mean, Ten Commandments, of course, but I would say Prince of Egypt.
Yeah, but, you know, Prince of Egypt, when you put in songs, I mean, that's how you, when you make it a musical, that's how, like, maybe that's all Ridley Scott had to do. You know, put some fun in it. Put in a musical
Christian
number.
Christian Bale maybe had to sing. I don't know. Maybe he couldn't.
He can sing. We saw Newsies. That's not a secret.
Oh, yes.
Well, so that's that. That's Exodus. Sadly, apparently not so great. And, you know, it's kind of, I think Bible movies in general have been kind of getting the same kinds of reviews as these. Darren Aronofsky kind of didn't deliver with Noah, I think, to audiences for some of the same reasons. Some people just had difficulty, like, fully committing to the story and these weird interpretations of it. And it's strange because, you know, Bible movies make for some epic, you know, or Bible stories, I should say, make for some epic movies. But I think it takes a lot of nuance and skill to get them right. And I don't think 2014 will be remembered as some kind of renaissance for these epic movies. So,
yeah, sadly no.
Well, Maria, I have great news for you because I saw The Imitation Game last night.
Oh, I'm so glad you have good news for me.
Oh, Imitation Game. To preface this, so we talk about Benedict Cumberbatch on the show pretty much every week of Now Conspiring. I don't know how it happens. He's not in the news that much. It always gets brought up. His engagement made it on the show, if that says anything. Which is strange.
Full blame of that. Fine.
Well, it's really your fault, Maria, of course. But it's also my fault because I like to, you know, feed your, you know, fangirl tendencies, you know, because it's funny. And I have to tell you, like, I've never been the biggest Benedict Cumberbatch fan. I just, you know, like, I've always just been like, whatever. He was Khan, and I know he does some show about Sherlock Holmes. But I will tell you, Maria, I knew I was going to be seeing Imitation Game. So a couple of weeks ago, I was like, you know what? It's time to see what Benedict can do. If he's going to be Doctor Strange, then I want to see what this guy is really made of. So I went on Netflix, and I started Sherlock episode 1. And, you know, I just finished the second season the other day. And I have two things to say about Sherlock. That is the best pilot I've ever seen. Ever. And
yeah.
I've never been so rapidly hooked by a show in my life. Second thing.
It's pretty incredible.
I think Sherlock is pretty much is the best interpretation of Sherlock Holmes I've ever seen. Period. I don't think anybody's even come close. And I this is coming from someone. I read the first Sherlock Holmes book when I was a kid. I've read volume 1 and 2 many, many times. I've always loved Sherlock Holmes. And I've always loved all the different attempts to, you know, reimagine Sherlock Holmes. I liked the Robert Downey Jr. versions, even though they were silly and kind of uninspired by the real character. I enjoyed Robert Downey Jr. in them. I really enjoyed Jude Law. I didn't enjoy Rachel McAdams whatsoever. But Benedict Cumberbatch plays a mean Sherlock Holmes, and Martin Freeman just nails Watson. So I've been loving every minute of that show. I've been binging it, and so I went into Imitation Game ready to see what else Benedict can do. I mean, I saw Star Trek Into Darkness, but that's really not his strongest role. So I'll tell you, Maria, I went into Imitation Game, and I was just, at first 30 minutes, I was like, this Benedict Cumberbatch guy, he's going places. I want to see him in lots of movies. I want to see him in a Marvel movie. I want to see him do more movies like Imitation Game, because I will tell you right now, Imitation Game is really, really good. It is really powerful, incredibly profound. The ending will have you just... It's the closest I've come to tears yet at the movies this year.
I thought you were going to say in your whole life.
Oh, no, I won't say that. It did... It delivered emotionally in a way that I thought Interstellar would. I was really expecting Interstellar to be this raw emotional punch. Imitation Game was that and more. And the funny thing is, it's not like a flashy movie whatsoever. The effects are decent at best, I mean, of which there are few, you know. But it's just a combination of Benedict Cumberbatch just really just nailing Alan Turing, and they told the story of Alan Turing in a way that was just so tactfully done, and the way that they the cinematography, the filmmaking, everything about it was just it just really worked. And for those of you guys who don't know, I should have said this before, but Imitation Game is based on a true story of Alan Turing, who basically invented the first computer during World War II. And his life was kind of riddled in controversy because, as it was later revealed, during that entire time, he was a homosexual. And the movie kind of delves into this and is not afraid to tackle it. Like, they really go into his childhood, what happened during the war, and then what happened after. And it's just an amazing, amazing character story. And there were people in the theater who were crying. Like, it was crazy. And the ending will just leave you feeling just very... Like, you walk away from it having, like, kind of learned something. which I feel like doesn't happen a lot in movies these days. Like, there is a very specific moral, but they manage to capture it without being preachy, which I really appreciate. So that's my like little quick review of Imitation Game. If you guys have a chance to go see it, I strongly recommend it. It's the perfect length. It's not too long, not too short. And if you're a Benedict Cumberbatch fan, this is the best movie I've ever seen with him in it. I mean, not that I've seen a lot of Benedict Cumberbatch movies, but I think this is a fantastic movie. It's definitely in my top 10, maybe top 5. I haven't finished rounding out my list yet, so.
Yeah, we still have a few movies left before finishing that list. I think, I'm not sure, but The Imitation Game has some Oscar buzz, is that right?
I think so, yeah. I think it could get Best Actor. I don't think it'll get Best Picture. Nom.
Do you think he deserves it? I mean, I'm not questioning Cumberbatch. But do you think he deserves it?
You know, it's funny. I went to the movie with one of my friends, and you know, we were talking about this, and we both agreed that he'll get the nomination, but I think Theory of Everything is going to get Best Actor.
Okay.
That was kind of like our consensus, because even though Benedict Cumberbatch did it really well, and it's a more profound story, a more profound movie, Theory of Everything, I think, has just a better... I forget the actor's name. It's killing me. He's the guy from Les Mis, but he plays Stephen Hawking. And I just think the Oscar buzz is around him right now. I think his portrayal is just really spot on. And I think it's...
Is it the boy... Oh, what is his name? Marius in Les Mis?
Yeah, that guy.
Okay, he's a great actor, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I didn't fully enjoy him in Les Mis, but I definitely appreciate his style. I think he's... He's definitely like, you know, he definitely committed to the Theory of Everything. If you just watching the trailer, you can tell. So I was wondering if Keira Knightley might get Best Supporting Actress. I mean, she wouldn't win, but like, she had a really, really solid performance in the third act. I don't know if the Academy would really pay attention to it though. But yeah, I think Imitation Game is one of the best of the year. Just as a whole, like, it just has a lot of great pieces to it. Tywin Lannister is in the film, being excellent bad guy. Oh yeah, he's great. And one funny thing I noticed is that Mark Strong is in this, and the funny thing about that is Mark Strong plays the villain in the first Sherlock Holmes movie, and he's in this movie not really as a villain, but, you know, he's in this movie with Benedict Cumberbatch, who plays Sherlock, so it's kind of a funny, you know...
An interesting connection.
Yeah, yeah. Sherlock Holmes brings people together, for sure. So, yeah, I will say one other thing. We didn't get to talk about this because I saw this last week after we recorded, but I saw Wild, the Reese Witherspoon movie. Maria, you need to go see Wild. You need to. It's so good.
I know.
The soundtrack alone is worth the $10. I don't know what you're waiting for.
I really want to see it. It's just like these limited releases and
that's
where
true.
I live and everything. But these are movies that I'm dying to see, and especially that one with Reese Witherspoon. It sounds amazing, and I'm so glad you liked it because it's confirmed the fact that I really, really want to see it.
It's amazing. It's amazing. There's a scene toward the end of the film that was just unbelievably heart-wrenching. It was incredible. And it's a long movie, but it definitely delivers for the full like 2.5 hours. It worked for me, for sure.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't remember the entire synopsis, but I'm pretty sure Reese Witherspoon carries the movie mostly by herself, right? I mean,
she's
sort of alone most of the time, unless there's flashbacks and stuff.
It's actually a lot like Imitation Game in that it's kind of they go back and forth between you know, memories of like her childhood, her young adult life, because the thrust of the movie, the narrative, is that she's hiking the Pacific Crest Trail, which is, this is a true story. In 1995, a woman named Cheryl Strayed, she named herself Strayed, because it's not a spoiler, you find out super early, she got divorced for reasons that are a spoiler, and she is kind of trying to find herself. And I know that sounds lame, but she has good reasons to find herself. You'll find out. She hikes 1,000 miles across the Mojave Desert, up through Nevada, California, all the way to the Washington border. And it's just a very excellent film in and of itself. Like, just because as she's going through that trail, we see flashes back. We see flashbacks into when she was a kid, her relationship with her mom, her marriage, what happened after her marriage, things that happened like in between. And you really get to know this character. And Reese Witherspoon, just fantastic acting. She just, it's probably her best performance, I'd say, since Election. So in the last like 15 years. So definitely watch it if you're a Reese Witherspoon fan. Even if you're not, it's the scenery alone is amazing. The characters are really funny, and it really moves along. It's a very interesting kind of torturous movie to watch, because cringeworthy things happen as she kind of pushes herself in the elements. It's a solid film. I don't know if it'll be top 10. Maybe. I don't know.
You don't think it's top 10?
Maybe. That's the thing. I haven't finished putting my list together. And everybody's like, best movie of 2014. Guys, it's December, not January.
Yeah.
Like,
there's two solid weeks of movies coming up.
Hobbit hasn't even come out yet. Yeah. Like, what are people doing? Wait for the new year. So with that, we will move into movie releases. Talking about the films that are going to come out next week. And, you know, Maria, I haven't even decided which one I'm going to watch, because the first one on this list is The Hobbit, and I haven't seen even the first two Hobbit movies, which I know is terrible, but I think you agree with me as well that Hobbit films, eh?
I actually like you a little bit more for saying that you've never seen them. I'm very proud of you.
It's weird. Sometimes we agree.
Just
strange
sometimes.
Reality. Strange times.
Yeah, but actually, you haven't seen the last two, and I've seen the first one and I saw the second one. I would tell you to see the second one, but only like the last 30 minutes, because again, Benedict Cumberbatch Smaug is just out of this world. But I'm actually very excited to see the third one, because it's the Battle of the Five Armies, and it's like finally, you know, the important and the climactic part of the whole story. So I really want to see what they do with it.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for like the supercut where they take all three movies and condense it into one movie the way it was supposed to be.
Yeah, as it should be.
That's what I want. Because for me, it's just like, why am I gonna spend hours and hours and hours on like the first five chapters of a book that isn't even the best book of that universe? It's just weird to me. I love The Hobbit as much as I love Lord of the Rings, but. It's just, I don't know, maybe I would like it better if they'd gone with, like, a different interpretation of Middle-earth. I know it's for continuity's sake, but I'm kind of sick of Peter Jackson's, you know, take on it. I wanted something fresh, you know? But
totally understand it.
Hey, if you guys want to watch The Hobbit, like, you know who you are, so we don't have to recommend it for you. It's obviously the third movie, so if you haven't seen the first two, you probably don't want to walk into this one. It's 2.5 hours long, so it's definitely an epic movie, as you can tell from the trailer. It stars Martin Freeman, Ian McKellen, of course, as Gandalf again. Andy Serkis reprises his role as Gollum, and I think Elijah Wood makes an appearance in this movie, too. Probably as a, you know, in the future or something like that. And Richard Armitage is Thorin, which I will say that I do enjoy his interpretation of Thorin. I did see the first 10 minutes of Hobbit. I'll admit it, but... So that's The Hobbit. That actually comes out December 17th on Wednesday. So it comes out a little early depending on where you're at. And then finally we have Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb, the third Night at the Museum movie. And this is one of Robin Williams' last films, which is definitely... Wow, it's an emotional one. But yeah, this is Ben Stiller's returning, Owen Wilson, Ben Kingsley. A lot of our old favorites, you know, reprising their roles. Of course, you have Owen and Steve Coogan replaying Jedediah and Octavius. Thank goodness. And of course, Robin Williams is back as Theodore Roosevelt. Maria, we've never talked about Night at the Museum. Did you enjoy the first two movies?
I think they're cute. I'm not a big fan of them because I'm basically not a big fan of Ben Stiller. Only every now and then does he surprise me. But I'm not sure if we needed a third one. What do you think?
Gosh, I'm kind of indifferent. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the plot is passable, you know, in terms of why they would have a sequel. I mean, it makes sense. Like, these things are still coming to life. There's more you can see from that. And I don't know. I don't feel like they're really stretching to make a third one. I think they would if they were making a fourth. That's when they would really be pushing the limits here. But, you know, I enjoyed the first one a lot, you know? I think it was different, it was fun. I only saw the second one once, and I was just kind of like, whatever. But, you know, it's they're not movies that are going to change your life, and that's fine. They're fun distractions, and I think this one's going to be probably just as good as the second one. Not as great as the first one, but who knows? I definitely want to see it because I want to see Robin Williams again while I can. You know, like this, it's definitely, you know, sad to know that this is one of his last few roles. But
yeah, very true.
I'll probably still check it out. Between that and The Hobbit, it's looking good for Night at the Museum because I've actually seen the movies. So we have trilogy closers so far, and there's two movies left that we're gonna tell you guys about. This last one is, I think, the last wide release movie, because our fourth recommendation, if you want to call it that, is limited. But this one is Annie, which I don't know how many people really wanted another Annie movie necessarily, but this is a different take. This is Annie set in the modern day, featuring, you know, a different story, different character, you know, different take on the characters. You know, this is a more like, you know, New York City like orphanage, you know, how they are today. Although it is kind of strange that Cameron Diaz runs it, because, you know, she's Cameron Diaz. How do you look like that and not, you know, and only run an orphanage? It's kind
of
strange.
Of course.
But, you know, maybe that's just my prejudice talking. I'm really excited about some of the roles, though. Jamie Foxx looks hilarious, and I love Rose Byrne. Did you like her in Neighbors?
Yes, she is fantastic. I think she's the best thing in Neighbors.
I think so, too. She's freaking hilarious. And I don't know if I can pronounce Annie's name. She was in Beasts of the Southern Wild, and I've heard her name pronounced before. But, gosh, I'm having the hardest time remembering how to pronounce it. It's like Kivenzine Wallace? Something like that?
I bought it.
Okay, yeah, we'll go for it. She obviously, like, is adorable, and she's probably going to get all the funny lines and... You know, I think the movie will work if Jamie Foxx and, we'll just call her Q, if they have a really solid relationship, I think it'll be a fun movie. I think the soundtrack sounds pretty good, and I think, you know, it's good to get a kids movie around the holidays. You know, I want to go see something with my nieces, and this looks like this could be it. But what do you think?
I think the same as you. Like, I wasn't really expecting for Annie to be remade, but I like the original movie. I like the story. I don't know if they're gonna keep the same music. Like,
oh yeah, they are.
Thing, the musical.
Hard Knock Life is in this. Tomorrow.
Okay.
All the normal then, stuff. Yeah. Maybe some new ones though, which
I'm good with it then.
Yeah, yeah. I like musicals. We don't get as many musicals anymore these days. They kind of fizzled out. We used to get them in the summer, and then, yeah, it kind of like died off. I feel like Hairspray was like the peak of that, you know.
Oh, Hairspray is so good.
Oh yeah. And then Mamma Mia came out a year after that, and then I don't know, it just, the quality started going down, and then now people just go to Broadway. But yeah, you know, we'll see if this one's any good. It's a little longer, it's 2 hours, which is pretty long for a kids movie, but you know, it definitely has some good, decent buzz around it. It's actually produced by Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith, which,
all
right. Yeah, yeah. It has a lot of producers, actually. You know, Jay-Z and a few other, like, big names, which is kind of funny. But they definitely worked hard on this movie. It looks like fun. Which Annie movie is your personal favorite? The really old one from the 80s or the one that came out in the 90s?
I actually didn't know there was one in the 90s.
What? How could you not know?
I know.
Yeah, 1999, Annie, where she has straight red hair, and she's played by, I don't remember that kid's name. That was my favorite Annie movie because I grew up on that. But gosh, I can't believe you've never seen it.
I know, right? No, the one I know is like from the early 80s, and she has like short, curly red hair. That's the one I know.
You need to look it up, Maria. You need to look it up. Speaking of things to look up, did you see any of the movies we talked about last week that I recommended? No.
No. But this is why, and I'm going to tell you why. So you told me the one that I love. That's the one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it came out, and everybody's sitting down and trying to watch a movie, and I go, oh, I heard this movie's fantastic. And they said, sure, let's watch it. And then you told me it was a little different, and it was just like a different kind of film, which I'm all for. My family is not. So if I start watching this movie with them and they start complaining about it, I'm not going to enjoy it. So I kind of left it for another day. But
right.
It's on my list. I will watch it.
All right, Maria Garcia. You win this round. But okay, so we'll get to that eventually. You still have some time to enjoy it. It'll be available for a while, I bet. So the last movie on our list is, I wanted to recommend this because I just think the cast is really interesting. This is one of the very many limited releases coming out. We don't really have time to talk about them all, but this one is called Ask Me Anything, starring Britt Robertson and Christian Slater and Justin Long and Martin Sheen, which is just a funny combination of people. It's a limited release drama movie. I don't know if it'll be playing anywhere near me, but it looks kind of interesting. It's about a girl named Kitty who she takes a year off after high school to kind of find herself. And, it's a little formulaic in terms of like what the story is about. But it looks like it could be like a fun, dark movie. And very, especially since like, she's supposed to be like, just finished high school and all the men in the cast are like really old. So you can imagine what's probably going to happen. But yeah, we'll see how that pans out. Could be terrible. I don't know. But yeah, there's not that many limited, there's not that many movies coming out like limited release wise that look that interesting, to be totally honest. This is kind of the part of Oscar season where they're really starting to push out the the Sundance, films that didn't quite get as much buzz because all those movies came out already a couple weeks ago. So I recommend if you guys are looking for something like really awesome to watch and something that's a little different, I recommend Imitation Game, Wild, Foxcatcher if you haven't gotten to it yet. I haven't been able to see Foxcatcher yet, Maria. I'm really annoyed by that. I've been waiting.
I'm there with you.
I can't wait. But that's all we have for you guys. Hope you enjoy the show. Hope you enjoy going to see Exodus. I'm sure you'll love it. Maria, didn't you Absolutely. Give that one 5 stars?
5 out of how many?
1,000.
You can watch it. It's not horrible, but just watch The Prince of Egypt first, okay? And then we'll talk.
Oh, so build up my expectations? No. I'll just
and
wait for the red box.
And then just lower them completely.
All right, on that note, we'll wrap it up. I'm your host, John Negroni.
And I'm Maria Garcia from Puerto Rico, because John loves it when I say that.
Yes, because we got to represent, so.
We do.
All right, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening to Now Conspiring. You can download and subscribe on iTunes, or you can check us out on johnnegroni.com to see what's the latest going on with me and Maria and what we're watching at the movies. Have a good week.